as a society, like as individuals and as civil society, we've been purposefully being kept in the dark for so long on these things. Like, the less transparency there is, the more of capacity, the less we know, the more people have been able to act with total impunity.
Absolutely, yes. You know, I think people that don't want to address this problem would not want to see this in any light.
This is Climate Curious, the podcast for people who are bored, scared, or confused by climate change.
I'm Marion Pasha, the director and curator at TEDx London and the co-host of this podcast, alongside the amazing Ben.
Hi, I'm Ben Hurst, activist and advocate exploring what positive masculinities can look like and self-confessed climate normie.
Hi, Ben.
Hello.
I want to ask you a question about fossil fuels.
Right. Is this another pop quiz?
No, this is less of a pop quiz.
Okay, all right, cool.
Do you think that we have gotten to the point now in this podcast that we can unanimously agree that fossil fuels are bad?
Yeah. I'm going to say yeah. Although for some reason, I feel like that's controversial to say yeah, but I'm pretty sure that that's the correct answer, yeah.
I think that's the correct answer.
Yeah. Renewables, that's where it's at.
Yeah. And I think one of the questions when I think about something being, okay, bad is a moralistic term, but something being like, we should no longer be using this.
Yeah.
I always think of like, how bad? Like, I want to understand the detail, if that makes sense.
Right,
like,
right.
Because it's one thing to be like, oh, these things are harmful. That's cool. Yeah. But, you know, when you really want to dig into it, you just want to understand the details, right?
Yeah. Are we talking about like, smoking cigarettes or eating what's-its? At what length end of the scale are we at?
I mean, I...
That's such a random analogy,
I would say we're on the... More on as if the planet was smoking cigarettes.
Right, yeah.
Of the scale of what's-its a cigarette rather than the...
Rather than the planet eating
I'm a bit resentful that what's-its are on the scale, personally.
Sorry.
Right. So how bad, right? This is the question. How bad are they? And... how do we even know this information? And you know, I'm a big data person. I like my numbers.
Yeah.
I like my geekery.
Yeah.
So super, super excited to have our guest on the show this week. Today, we're joined by a rather cool dude, Rob Shurek, who is the executive director for North America at Carbon Tracker. Now, some of you remember, we had Mark Campanelli, Carbon Tracker, on a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
You will remember his infamous climate confession. If not, go back and listen to that episode. And Rob, you're going to tell us a bit about how bad and what that even means as a question.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you about that. That's right. So we are working on a global registry of fossil fuels. And, you know, you're asking the question, how bad? Well, the top line numbers are in that database. And really what it is we've got somewhere between 7 and 8 times the amount of fossil fuel reserves in the world that we could safely burn and have just a 50% chance of meeting the 1.5 degree centigrade target.
Seven to eight times the amount.
Yeah.
So we could do it 7 or 8 times over and still be cool.
No.
Oh, right. Okay. I was like, that is a lot of times. Wait, what does that mean then?
Let's unpack that a little bit. Because that is like a, from my perspective, that's like a very odd number. So let's like get into what that means.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can imagine that, you know, the atmosphere can only contain so much carbon before the planet warms. And when we burn fossil fuels, we emit that carbon. And what it's saying is we have somewhere between, depending on the probability you want to meet that target, between 300 and 400 gigatons of carbon that we could still put up in the atmosphere. And have some chance of not making the planet get too warm.
Mm-hmm.
7 to 8 times means we've got 7 to 8 times that amount that the world is calling reserves. And I should tell you this, there's fossil fuels in the ground everywhere. A reserve is not just the fossil fuel that's in the ground. A reserve is something that somebody has said, we can get that out of the ground at a reasonable cost.
Right.
So these are things that you know, market economies will likely dig up if we don't do anything about it.
Right. So if we're talking about like extractable things that we can actually, or people can get their hands on now if they want to, and you're saying there is 7 times the amount that we can burn and still survive, or we can burn and still the planet not get too warm, times that by 7 or 8, and that's the amount that there is accessible.
That's right.
Oh my gosh, that's just stupid, really, isn't it?
I mean, this is worrying, I think, in a way. The question I have is, there are these reserves globally. Are there restrictions on how much we can pull out?
Basically, no. In fact, there are no restrictions. And you probably have heard of the Paris Agreement. You know,
tell listeners who've kind of heard of it but don't know what that is, what the Paris Agreement is.
Yeah, so the Paris Agreement in 2015 was part of a global process where people came to an agreement to limit warming to well below 2 degrees and preferably no more than 1.5 degrees centigrade, which is based on scientists saying if we go beyond that, we start having catastrophic problems.
Right.
We start having coral reefs die. We start having ice caps melt. Really, really bad things, some of which may be happening even before that. Yep. But let's not talk about that part right now.
Right. So we'll come back to that. Swing back around.
Yeah, more bad news. So the point is, what we are looking at is, okay, well, how much more carbon can we put in the atmosphere for that? And we see that it's going to be this massive amount. Mm-hmm. We don't have much left, but we have a massive amount available to do that. And there are no restrictions on it. That Paris Agreement that I mentioned, it doesn't have any restrictions on fossil fuels, even though they're the main driver of warming. It talked about reducing demand. It talked about, you know, alternative energies, but it didn't talk about the elephant in the room, which is fossil fuel use and consumption. And that starts with the countries that are producing it. So the registry is about identifying the kinds of fuels and their emissions that are embedded in the world's reserves.
And so we're talking coal, oil, and gas, right?
That's right.
You said that we have the big picture numbers. Like on a planetary level, we know that we have these reserves. What do we know on a planetary level? And I know that the work you're doing is kind of drilling down a bit more. Tell me a little bit about, like, yeah, what do we know and why do we need more detail?
Yeah, so what do we know? I'm going to interpret that to mean, what do we know publicly? What do we know that's out there in the public domain?
Right.
Because there is an important twist here.
There's a difference between what we know publicly and what we know privately.
Absolutely, because, let me get to that.
Okay, sorry.
You touched on Ben's interest area.
I'm like, oh, conspiracies, eh?
Yeah. That's exactly right. So what we know in the public domain, we have a general sense. We have a number of groups, multilaterals, some corporations, and also agencies of governments that look at the big picture and could say, this is how much the volume of reserves that we have globally. But we don't have that information at the level at which decisions are made. What is that level? That level is when a government decides to give a license for a field, or a company decides to sanction a project. That means do it. At the field level, or when they spend money to develop the field to get their fossil fuels out, or when they go back to the government and say, we need to renew our license on this field. And so we don't have that information. And so all the decision points just go by us in a flash. We don't really think about, okay, is it appropriate for us to sanction another coal mine or another oil and gas field? We don't have it. And here's the thing. You might think, okay, well, our company is going to keep all this information private, but they certainly would like to. But in almost every instance, these are public-private partnerships. Only in the U.S. do you have a lot of private ownership of mineral rights. Almost everywhere, governments own it. Mm. So governments are often entitled to have information about the fields that the companies go get. Why don't they put that out there in the open and let people really see and understand what's going on at the license level?
Okay, so we're talking about people being able to see or being able to identify where the problems are being caused, or like who is building what, who is extracting what, who is doing whatever they're doing. You're saying that on a big scale, we know roughly what is happening around the world, but like on a local level, we're not so sure who's doing it, or we maybe do know, because we're not logging it, nobody's able to stop it.
Yeah, that's right. We're not measuring it at the local level in a way that people who care about this issue can deal with, and so we can't manage it. Mm. I'll just give an example of how it might work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
fair. There is some data for some countries. So we have what we would call dense data, meaning as opposed to sparse. meaning we have some amount of useful information about an individual field. We have that for about 15% of global production today. Oh, okay. So most of it is informationally dark. We don't have any, you know, information about what, you know, what is there. But in that 15%, we have some interesting examples. Like Norway has, you know, we can look and say, okay, well, here's the emissions from the 10 most emitting fields in Norway. Mm-hmm. You know, you could imagine the Norwegian government might someday come and say, well, you know, we want to reduce emissions from these fields now. We know we have to do that. And so we have to make some tough policy choices about it. And maybe we're going to go get another country that also produces fossil fuels and get them to agree to do that as well. Okay. So this is the kind of information that will allow them to think about that. But beyond that, let's say they decide they don't want to do that. Like, no, thanks. Let somebody else cut. Okay. Well,
the government decides they don't want to do it.
Yeah, the government decides they don't want to do it. Well, okay. Well, maybe the opposition parties, maybe civil society, maybe others can step in and say, wait a minute, hold on. We need to do our share as well. But for them to be able to make that argument, they need that data. And that's what we want to make available to them.
Okay. So that's where the transparency part of it comes in. So you've made a registry.
What kind of data are you gathering and like will be available?
Great. So I think the best way to think about it is a database of databases. So there are
Marion space.
Yeah. You know, it's like a list of lists. So we have databases all around the world. The Energy Information Agency in the US, BP publishes some data, Norway publishes data, Canada, Mexico, so on and so forth. But it's not all collected in one place, nor is it built for doing things on climate. But I won't go down that road right now. So we are bringing together all this data in one place so that you can look at it. And what kind of information do we have? Well, we have information on reserves. How much is there, right? Production. How fast is it being produced out of the ground? Emissions. Okay, well, that's actually more complicated than you might think. There's carbon dioxide emissions. There's methane emissions if we're talking about natural gas. Yep. Mm-hmm. There's different ways of converting methane to carbon dioxide that can change the number significantly. And our role isn't to make judgments about it. Our role is to put all that information out there and let people use tools and other things associated with the website to go make their own calculations. Like, I want to find the 10 dirtiest gas projects in Central Africa. Okay, well, we're going to give you the information that's going to let you do that and build, a campaign or whatever it is you're doing on that.
And will this database of databases, list of lists, love it.
The list of all lists.
Yeah. Will it also include information on like who's financing these projects? And because I feel like in terms of, you know, you're mentioning using this as a way to hold governments to account and for civil society and opposition parties. Part of, I guess we've been thinking a lot, Ben and I, about accountability. Like, will it also include some of that information around like who is pushing these projects forward?
Sure. So accountability and transparency often go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you need to understand what the facts are and you need to get to a common factual background to make decisions on things as well. So our hope is eventually governments will take some of this up and say, okay, we do have this issue. We want to actually collectively make a decision to reduce emissions. Will it eventually have information about lenders? One of the things that we want to do with the registry is make it dynamic. And what I mean by that is respond to user needs.
Oh, interesting.
So if there are people that say, look, what we need is information about what loans are going into these projects, that's something that absolutely we'd love to include in the database. The first thing that's next up in that vein is to put together who are the operators for the fields that we have. And so there's some great data out there. There are some jurisdictions where we have that information, some where we don't. And other databases like Open Corporates, for example, that lets you know not just is it, let's say, Exxon that runs this, but is it Exxon Mozambique or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. You know exactly the corporate entity that is involved in the project.
What I'm curious about is whether you think that it's also going to be interesting for governments within countries to use it.
Yeah, I think that there are going to be lots of uses for that. I think we're going to also start working on things that aren't in the database now. This is where I think it becomes really useful for some of these big countries is licenses. Mm. So we're talking about projects that have already been developed. Mm. But that's the tip of the iceberg. There are all these licenses that big governments still want to hand out. And those licenses, right, will stand in real contrast to, for example, the UK government's climate commitments.
Yes.
Right? You've got those climate commitments. You could see the reserves that they are likely to dig out already. And then there's the whole chain of licenses where new projects are coming up.
Yeah, so I think Tessa Khan talked about this a little bit in the episode we did with her as well. And this is mind-boggling to me, you know, the idea that – and I think this is why something like this is so important as a citizen and also as a member of civil society, right? Like, you have your government going out there making these public commitments, you know,
right.
Like – you know, Bojo up there at COP doing his thing or whatever, Alok Sharma and all these people. And, you know, trying to position the UK as a climate leader, which regardless of your politics, you're like, great, this is what we want, right? This is a good thing. And yet they're acting in contrast to that. They're allowing these licenses to go forward. They're green lighting projects. So I think it's a good accountability tool, right? Mm-hmm. Like you said, transparency and accountability going hand in hand. Like, I feel like then groups in the UK can be like, well, actually, we've got the numbers that show that this is – that you're not actually – you're not living up to your commitments.
You're not honoring the commitment, yeah.
And I think that's great because I do think it's harder to – like hold people to account or to really have a persuasive argument when you don't have the data to back it up.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely critical. And you have to get people and that's part of the reason we want to use a lot of government sources.
Yeah.
Because what we want to do is take off the table the idea that someone could say, well, your numbers are all wrong.
Right.
Well, we want to say, well, our numbers are your numbers.
I mean, that's awesome. And we've seen that work really well with software, right? Like this idea of being kind of open source in a way so that people can come in and use it and then there's like a good feedback.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask a philosophical question.
Yes. That's my favorite.
As you do.
Maybe it's not so cool, but I want to kind of zoom out a bit and think about something you said earlier. The more we do this podcast, the more people we talk to, the thing that I start to think about is how we've, as a society, like as individuals and as civil society, we've been purposefully being kept in the dark for so long on these things. Like the less transparency there is, the more opacity, the less we know, the more people have been able to act with total impunity.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious to know, in your experience, is that true? Is there for certain organizations a vested interest in keeping this information out of the public domain?
Absolutely, yes. I think people that don't want to address this problem would not want to see this in the light of day.
That's scary, isn't it? My God, that was a twist, a turn.
What
has the response been? Like, what has, or have you had a response, like from not necessarily to name specific people or companies or whatever, but like, what's the feeling been around the campaign or around the resource?
Yeah, well, I mean, I should say, even though what I said may have been a bit conspiratorial, I didn't mean it. Like, it's not like someone.
It's just me. Yeah, it's not you. Okay, don't worry. You're
no,
good.
No one's painted a target on my back, as far as I know, or anything like
right,
that.
Yeah. Right.
So I don't. I haven't had any sort of staunch resistance to it. We've had early engagements with governments and they've kind of more wanted to watch and see how it develops rather than participate.
Right.
I think there's going to be some governments that will want to participate because the same reason that keeping it sort of in the dark, it helps those who want to just continue extracting and not worry about this problem we have called, you know, climate change. There are some governments and others that are turning the corner. They're saying, okay, we know we have to stop producing oil and gas and coal. We have to. And we're ready to, and our citizenry wants us to.
Yeah.
And we're going to follow what they want. Mm. And so there are, you know, similarly people on the other side that say, let's shine a light on it.
Yeah. I think that's what one of my things is, because it's, you know, I've come to understand that, yes, there have always been a couple of people who are bad actors, right? Like, who purposefully kept things hidden and all of that. We know that now, right? But in general, it was more of it's a convenience thing, right? Like, people don't share information, so then they can just do what they want and they can just not be held accountable because it's easier, right? You could operate more freely, even if you're not doing anything bad, but you can just operate more freely.
So important, right? Because the redistribution of information is like redistribution of power, essentially like a redistribution of the ability to change a situation. And so putting that, not even in the hands of specific people, but just in the open, means that pressure can be applied from every direction. In order to enact change, which I think is like fundamental at this point, especially because we're no longer talking about what the solutions are and like, oh, can we do stuff? We know that we can do stuff. It's just about how quickly we can do it. So I guess that becomes really, really important to equip as many people as possible with the ability to do that, to pressure.
That's absolutely right. Mm.
The thing that comes to mind for me right now listening to you is also just because more recently I've been digging into understanding, you know, what do governments and countries count in different ways? And I've realized that one of the things that happens is they're like accountants. They love accounting tricks. So they love moving some set of emissions from them somewhere else so that they can cut it from themselves, or they can not include this here so that decreases. And the more I hear about those examples, the more I feel like we're only screwing ourselves. It's not like if you move your emissions from this country to that country, it doesn't exist. Like, it doesn't warm the planet. Right. It still warms the planet and it still affects all of us. Mm. And if there's no way of checking that, then we're allowing these accounting tricks to go unchecked.
That's right. I mean, you know, I think of the Paris Agreement, if you will, as the one in 2015, where we all agreed we're going to, you know, get to a 1.5 degree carbon budget, as like kind of an agreement, if you will, like we're gonna all eat less cookies, okay? Fossil fuels being the cookies. But the problem is, even though we've said that, we've said, oh, but anybody can make as many cookies as they want to make and put them on the table here in front of us.
Yeah,
that's what we're doing. And so,
yeah. It's just ridiculous. Yeah.
I would like to take this cookie analogy further and say my thing that I don't like is where Ben has eaten the cookie, but he's left the wrapper with me.
So I'm
being accused of eating the cookie, but you've actually eaten the cookie.
And I see this in real time. I've got six nieces. So I know what this looks like, and it's not a good picture. It's not where we want to be.
I wanted to ask you, Rob, a last question around this, which is, you know, of all the data you've seen, of all the kind of the kind of tools that you're creating, which one are you most excited about? Like, what is the thing that like you've seen out there that makes you feel like, oh, this is cool?
Well, you know, if I could speak to the nerds in the audience,
yes,
I think it's the tool that combines reserves, production, and scenarios that's in the middle of the country level charts that I think is the most interesting one, because it tells you something about these are all the futures that people see. Okay. And here's how the reserves we have today already sit within those futures. And I think that's the kind of most novel thing.
I love it.
That's so good.
I have this vision of like Clover, who's one of our guests and like co-conspirators on this podcast, and her like army of young climate activists on this site, just like pulling out this information and making placards and like holding people accountable.
Yeah. It's going to make it so much easier for the hackers.
Go onto the database
instead of trying to sift through the back doors of the internet.
But I don't know what world you live in.
Yeah, I've watched too much this. Mr. Robot. I'm living in a different space. But it is really cool. It is like really genuinely I said to you before we started recording that I think this is one of like the most important things that I've heard about. Or everything's really important. But I think like making knowledge available to people is so fundamental, especially when we're all living in an experience or in a time when things have been held back and people have not known what's going on, which has allowed people to act in ways that are harmful to all of us. So I think that's incredible.
That's absolutely our hope, because we think, you know, I mean, you know, people working are going to come up with things that we haven't even thought of, you know? So I think it's going to be great.
And now it's time for our climate confessions. Let's fess up to the bad habits we just can't kick.
So I'm going to, I have one in my head. It's probably one you have heard before, I'm going to guess. But it is one that I actually feel guilty about a lot. And it just comes back to me in a flash. You know, you have these guilty moments where you just think about something that happened. You're like, I wish I hadn't done that.
Yeah.
You know, yes. And then like 5 years later, it happens again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so this was 2014 or 15, I forget. I was invited to go speak at the OECD in Paris.
Mm.
And I live in Texas. I live in Austin, Texas. That's a long flight, right? And I went over there. I was there probably for 3 days. Really didn't have much else to do other than go to the OECD event and then speak. And I spoke for probably 4 or 5 minutes and then got on a plane to fly home. And I thought, was that worth it? Yeah. I mean, you know, I've never actually brought myself to go figure out how much carbon was wasted in me doing
carbon
that.
Carbon per minute.
That. Yeah. And you know, the pandemic just made it worse because you're like, well, you can replace all this stuff with Zoom.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. And I thought,
you're like, oh, I really didn't need to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there is something about us. We've all like reevaluated the way we think about our time. Like, it's one thing if you go and you've got a lot of things planned in and you're doing it. But yeah, pre-pandemic, I think people would just fly anywhere for like 5 minutes.
I would. Yeah. Just go for it. Just
I mean, you've known one of my climate confessions from season one was that I once took a flight only for the points.
Yeah. that's irreparable damage.
Yeah,
has been
I've
done.
Literally killed something on the planet because of this. And like, you know, exactly. I have those moments. That's my moment. That's my thing when I look back and I think, what was I thinking? Like, who would do that? Now I would never think about doing that. But yeah, so we appreciate your honesty there.
Yeah.
Rob. That's great. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. We love transparency and accountability and we love data. So it's been really great to have you.
Well, I really enjoyed this podcast. So you got a new listener too.
Thank you so much. And remember,
stay curious. Thank you for joining us this week. We really hope you enjoyed this episode.
If you did, please hit the follow button to make sure you get next week's release.
We are now officially crowdsourcing Climate Confessions, so please leave yours in the ratings and the reviews section, and we'll shout out for you next time. And shout out to our fabulous team behind the pod.
This episode was produced by Josie Coulter.
Comms written by Tess Lowry.
Artwork designed by Rebecca Mingus.
Curation by Mariam Pasha.
Mixed and engineered by Ben Beheshti.
Music also by Ben Beheshti.
Presented by Ben Hurst
and Mariam Pasha. Remember, stay curious.